The organizers of last Saturday's astonishingly large Global Women's March also had an event Sunday in D.C., 500 women trained to run for political office. They have a 10 Actions, 100 Days program, this week's action, writing postcards to senators. And today, organizers meet about going forward. But will they take up the issue of race? It's called intersectionality, a word coined by a civil rights activist in the late 1980s, to describe related systems of oppression. For instance, white and black women could recognize their same issues. But social media wasn't having it. White women were being attacked for being privileged. A popular poem by John Etta Elzey asked, "Where were you when your ancestors set out to steal my ancestors from our homes?" It's a wound that may take a while to heal. Ijoma Oluwo is editor-at-large for the media site The Establishment. She's here by Skype. And Ijoma, you're in Seattle. You are black. Didn't walk. Why?
You know, I thought about it. I gave it a lot of thought. And honestly, emotionally, it was really too hard. As the day became nearer and I saw a lot of people who had never marched before, who had never marched with me before and with other people of color before, so excited to march for the first time, it became a really conflicting and emotional time, and it honestly wasn't something I could handle.
Well, you've written a piece describing your thoughts after you watched the marches. Now, first of all, what was it like watching the marches?
You know, it was a mix. It was wonderful to know that so many people were taking to the streets and were speaking out. But if you are a person of color who has been fighting for black lives and brown lives, if you are a water protector who has been hosed down in Standing Rock, you have been begging people to stand next to you for so long. And so it can be hard to look at it and not wonder how many lives could be saved if we had even a tenth of these many people showing up at a Black Lives Matter march to push for police accountability and to push for reform. And that becomes hard because you can't bring people back from beyond the grave.
Well, you titled your piece, "When You Brag That the Women's Marches Were Nonviolent," because people were proud of that. I mean, millions of women and not one arrest was one of the cries afterwards. Could you sum up your thoughts at the end of this piece? You know, is it the thought that you could march a million white women down the street without fear?
You know, my thoughts when I was writing this piece was I was really hoping people could see what the language around the self-congratulatory tone really meant, and, you know, the effects that that could have on people of color. When you look at how marches are described, this march was described completely differently than many other very peaceful marches for Black lives. And when you look at how we are described as thugs when we take to the street, we are described as, you know, disruptors and lawbreakers when we take to the street, and people are pulled off the street not doing anything violent and arrested. To brag that no one was arrested in a march, you know, that was filled with white women, as if that is an accomplishment that you really had a huge part of. What it does is then it says that marches that were branded as disruptive are less than. And the truth is we are all fighting for very important things, but only certain people get to march down the street and not have to worry about violence from police officers.
Look, you are not alone. There are other critics saying, and for instance, here's LaRonda Magano Bryant at Williams College, a professor who didn't join the march, saying, you know, the sense of betrayal white women have expressed in the post-election season is disingenuous, since we can't say enough about the ways they turned out at the polls. I mean, 53% of married white women did vote for Donald Trump. But then you have people like Gloria Steinem saying she and other leaders in the women's movement are devoted to figuring this racial divide out. Immediately after the first social media posts came up, the original women who had the idea, white women, brought in veteran non-white activists, Linda Sarsour, Tamika Mallory, Carmen Perez. They turned it over to others. They were very clear that they wanted to address some of these issues to the extent that others, there's sort of now a backlash to the reaction to the initial backlash. Others like Emma Kate Simmons have written that the agenda for the Women's March was hijacked, and now organizers are bent on highlighting differences instead of talking about the way we are all the same, and we lose when that happens. What about that thought that instead of, as she writes in a New York Times op-ed, all this nasty tit-for-tat between white versus black, queer, Muslim, trans, and other identities, divides the state of feminism instead of highlighting our commonalities, our need for childcare, healthcare.
You know, I think it's interesting when people say this, because what we have to ask is, what is really dividing? Because when you say that it is divisive, are the differences divisive, or is it voicing the differences that's divisive? So either you want women of color, trans women, disabled women, queer women to just be quiet and never state what they need in the name of unity, or you want to address it and show that, yes, when you say you are here for women, you are here for all women. So if you want to move women forward, you have to ask, what is holding you back? What is hurting you? I care about you. There's nothing more unifying than reaching out to people and saying, what do you need?
But this was exactly what Gloria Steinem and other women are saying they intend to do. And we met women of color who went to the march specifically because they wanted to have their voices heard. Here's Raven Stubbs, a student at Harvard, who traveled to D.C. with a busload of Harvard students and alumni.
And I think it was very important for me, one being geographically, you can locate me as a woman of color, and I deserve to take up that space. I deserve to be included in women. When you say women's march, that has to include me. So I decided to get on the bus to take up space, physically and mentally.
Ijeoma, if you feel your issues are being sidelined, why not get off the sideline?
Well, and I think that that's part of what we are doing, and we are speaking out in different ways, right? I've been very vocal about issues that I think need to be addressed, and a lot of other women have been as well. But I think that if we want to move forward, we can't just say we're here now, let's forget the past, because we have to understand how we got here. Mm. We have to understand who's been left behind and why, if we don't want to continue to do that in the future. And when we look at this march, it was a beautiful thing. But we also have, you know, a lot of disabled women who felt really left out. They were barely mentioned in the platform. And accessibility-wise, many couldn't even show up. A lot of trans women were harmed by the language used in a lot of this. And a lot of women of color felt very hurt as well. This does not mean that the march was bad, but it means that if you really do mean what you say, that you want to move forward intersectionally with all women, that you're going to investigate and say, okay, where could we have done better?
Well, and you are reflecting a very deep history here. Gloria Steinem writes about this as well. Yes, in the early suffragette movement, there were racist white women who only wanted the vote for white women to offset the vote that had been given to black men. And then there was Elizabeth Cady Stanton, though, who stood against that and said, no, we want the vote for all women. So this debate, this unease goes back a long time. But I just want to comment on one thing you said. You said you saw women, white women, who hadn't marched before. How do you know? Because some of us looked out and saw, you know, beautiful gray-haired white women who did march for civil rights in the 60s, who marched even before that. So, you know, maybe both sides of this have to maybe let down their perceptions a tiny bit.
I think that a lot of women who had come out before, but I also know that I didn't see a lot of these people at any Black Lives Matter marches. I've been there. I've been looking around.
Yeah.
And when you see people you've known your entire life who speak up online, who say, oh, this is so bad, this is so awful, we're so upset that there's another video of a Black man or a Black woman being killed in the street, but they can't come out and march for you. And then to see them so excited, buying plane tickets, you know, knitting hats, doing all these things, getting ready to get out and march in the street. And you're wondering, where was that need to get out and say something when we were being shot? I am seeing many dozens of members of my community who I have not seen at a single march turn up. And it doesn't mean that they shouldn't turn up at this march. But I do think that if we want to understand why things got the way they are, you do have to investigate. Why now? Why was this, you know, too far? Why was this the final straw? Why wasn't the final straw watching Tamir Rice being shot? That's what I think people need to ask themselves. Because if we want to move forward and not do this again, if we want to not get complacent again, we have to understand where we've been complacent in the past.
That's Ijeoma Oluo, editor-at-large for The Establishment, a media site. Ijeoma, thank you so much.
Thank you.